What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. The issue of recruiting volunteers to maintain the U.S. military is relevant. Enlistments are dropping, and the majority of Americans are no longer in belief that the war is worth fighting. The U.S. has gone back and forth between a voluntary military and conscription. Could the draft be brought back today? I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me at the roundtable, I welcome four students from Florida High. We're always glad to have them. And Carrie Warren is in the 10th grade, and her thing is dance and food.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Always glad to have you back. Carly Steed is in journalism. She's also in the 10th grade, and theater is her thing.
Thank you for having me, too.
Kalisha Sierra, I'm always glad to have her. She's been coming for a long time, and she is a graduating senior. Her thing is music and art and pizza.
Happy to be here, Liz.
Glad to have you. And Harley Ramba. Harley is in the 10th grade. He's into golf, SGA, politics, and friends.
It's great to be back.
Glad to have you, all of you. What we're going to talk about today is the draft, or conscription. And it's proven to be a real controversial issue throughout America's history. It was utilized in the Civil War and World War I and World War II and the Cold War, including Korean and Vietnam War. This topic, as it surfaces and we talk about it, is it something that you all even discuss among your peers? I mean, does the draft come up? Is it significant to you at all? No. I'm looking at you first, so I'll start with you, since you're the lone male here today. But I just wonder, do you think about it, Harley? Oh.
Not regularly. It doesn't come up in, like, normal conversations.
Okay. Does it come up at all? I mean, because even though we say we don't have drafts, at 18, mm-hmm. 30 days after 18, your 18th birthday, you are supposed to register mm-hmm. regardless. So I just, you know, that's why I wonder, does it come up at all? Or do you all think?
Around my age, it doesn't. I mean, mm-hmm. it could be different for older people, mm-hmm. but around the 16, 17-year-old age, it doesn't.
It doesn't. You're not fazed by it. What about you females? Where do you all sit on this? You might have brothers or whatever.
I've just heard, like, males or just guys in general make jokes about how at 18 you can register, you know, for the war, go into war, but you can't do, like, any of the stuff you do at 21. Like,
right.
That's usually the bare discussion, and there's nothing else after that.
And those are good points. I'm glad you brought those up, because we're going to talk about those. It just doesn't make sense. You can do all these other things. You can go out and kill people at 18, you know, but then you can't buy alcohol until you're 21.
Yeah.
I mean, there is something wrong with that picture. It doesn't make much sense. So as usual, you brought up some very good issues, okay? How about the rest of you? Where do you sit on this? What do you think about it?
For one, we don't really, like as Harley said, I feel like it's not a thing we really talk about, the mm-hmm. war, the draft. Like,
okay.
Honestly, to me, the draft sounds like an old-timey thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't even know that was still a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Girls allowed to be drafted?
No, not at this point.
Yeah, no, right?
Right.
So,
and that's one of the issues.
It doesn't apply to us at this point, so
mm-hmm.
we don't talk about it.
Yeah, like, yeah, we really don't, like, talk about it. I used to hear, like, boys a lot would be like, oh, yeah, when I'm 18, I'm going to sign up and, you know, whatever.
But. Well, it seems to surface its head when we start, well, for example, people no longer support the war like they used to, okay? And the number of enlisted folks is not as high as it used to be. Indeed, what would happen if we got into a war and we didn't have enough volunteers? They would have to go, I guess, back to the draft system, okay? And so it's been a controversial issue ongoing. I think President Nixon campaigned on a promise to end the draft. And after a two-year extension in 1973, he did end it. Conscription is basically when people of a specific age are required to do national service by doing basic army training. And it still exists in a number of countries, just to name a few. I mean, America, Brazil, Germany, South Korea, Taiwan, Turkey. I mean, we can go on. So even though we don't talk about it, it is something that is very much, you know, a real deal. And that's just naming a few. How do you feel about the draft or conscription itself? And by that, I mean, how do you feel that a country or your country can demand or require, you know, that you participate in an activity that you may or may not agree with?
That's, like, such, like, a weird, like, two-sided, like, black and white, gray subject, because I think that if you're an American, then should you, you know, want to protect your country and want to fight? But then again, some people aren't meant for war. So mm-hmm. are you drafting the wrong people? Are you drafting people who mm-hmm. could never do something like that? Is it, I don't know, it's so complicated.
It opened up a whole can of worms.
Yeah, and then there's the whole, because of the fact that not many people are enlisting, we keep sending the same guys over there over and over. And then they come back and nobody's helping them with what they've experienced or what is happening with them. So,
exactly.
I mean, that's a problem, too.
Yeah. Oh, you named all of them.
I know personally I wouldn't, like, go into the military, but if I was, like, if I, like, needed to, because, like, I feel like just the military is my path that I'm mm-hmm. planning to
so
take.
So you wouldn't select.
I wouldn't select the path, but if I was needing to, or I would do it voluntarily if I needed to do it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, like, I think it's kind of, yeah, it is kind of complicated because, mm-hmm. like, on the one hand, you want to, like, your country, like, usually does so much for you, and, like, there's a lot, and it's, like, you should return the favor, like, you should be fighting for your country, but at the same time, like, mm-hmm. it's just, not everybody, we shouldn't be sending everybody over there.
And
like, some people just
the
can't.
Other issue is, what if you don't agree with what your country is doing?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
you, I've read so many stories. Humans of New York, he did a thing on veterans. And they have so many accounts of going to Iran and Iraq and the things that they're doing. They're so confused. They're like, this is not why we came here. Like, I've seen so much destruction and we're just waiting. I don't know. Agree?
I think it's weird because if so many people don't want to go to war, then, like, shouldn't that be a thing? Like, hey, why are we going to war? So many people don't want
to go. Going to war itself, you mean?
Yeah, well, just, like, or, like, if so many people aren't enlisting, it's like, hey, why aren't so many people list? Like, why is the difference? Like, I don't know what that is, and maybe that's a reason for it, but...
Well, yeah.
You, like, that's an at-home
issue, all of you
issue,
have
like.
Really identified some very relevant issues when it comes to the draft or conscription. And in addition, the fact that it's only male. Nobody brought that up. You know, that only males can be drafted.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
So, this is going to sound weird. This is a two-way street.
Okay.
So, and I'm going to use myself as an example. Some women want to fight. It's equality. So, equality, some of them totally agree that women should be drafted into the war. And then you have to consider anatomy. Consider me. Mm-hmm. I am 4'10", I'm not growing, and I'm 90 pounds. I couldn't lift. I can't lift my dog.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do stuff that a man, like, can physically do because of anatomy. So then there's the whole thing, do we draft women? Are women supposed to stay and, I don't know, watch the children or keep things running while men are off at war? And I don't know, but I personally mm-hmm. I couldn't do it, so I don't know if we should draft women or if I don't know.
Well, let's see. What do other folks say about that? What do you think?
I mean, if you need more people in the military, draft the women who need it, like, who can be drafted, right? So, like,
I feel like there's, like,
if you're
some,
looking
like,
for
I
mean, people to be drafted, you're missing, like, 50% of the population
true.
Here.
Right. There's already a physical test.
Yeah, there's a physical test. Like,
it's just about equality, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, I think... Like people, like we could keep people like Kalisha from going to war and still right. like
yeah,
have women going to war
and still have women.
Then
we can draft women as long as they can pass a physical.
Yeah, as long as they could pass the physical. Well, what's patriotism? I mean, is that a part?
Oh yeah,
support your country.
Is that a part of it?
It is. Yeah. It really is.
So where does it fit in this picture? You know, if we're talking about drafting and, you know, this is a country that has supposed to take care of us and we're supposed to love and honor and cherish, what role does that play in our decision making as to whether we would join the military or not?
I feel like more patriotic people would be more voluntary to go because they know what they're standing for, or I'm not saying like other people who aren't as patriotic wouldn't go to like stand for your country, but I know that personally that if, because I'm pretty patriotic, I think personally, like I would go to stand for my country because I know what, like who I'm standing for, all the people and all the other people who can't stand for them.
Okay. What if you didn't agree with the position your country was taking?
Then I just have to do it. There's a lot of things that in people's lives that they don't agree with that it's just like you have to do.
Okay. So well, that leads us to talk about the conscientious objector, and we'll get there. So do you feel that the draft is a required act of patriotism?
What does that mean?
Like, that, is it, if you love your country, do you have to?
You would do it. There would like, be that, there'd be no,
no
question
the
about
question,
it.
Yeah.
There's other ways to show that you love your country, right? Like, and there's other ways to work for the government without like physically joining the army, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, other sides different of political the story. Position that you can do to support your country and support the views of your personal beliefs.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, you're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this hour we are looking at the draft, our conscription, versus the all-volunteer force. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return shortly. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me, I have students from Florida High. Joining me, I have Inquiry Warren, I have Carly Steed, I have Kalisha Sierra, and I have Harley Ramba. We have been looking at the various components of the draft versus the all-volunteer force. Are there any additional problems that you would identify with conscription or the draft?
People who haven't shot a gun before.
Well,
lack of experience.
Okay, but they're going to go through basic training.
Yeah, but...
Lack of emotional help when you get back, like Kalisha was saying. Mm-hmm. Even, like, right now, you don't have the help that veterans need to get back on their feet from after the war, and then... Say there was a draft, that's a whole lot more people that are going to come back and need that help. Mm-hmm. That if it's not there now, what are you going to do later?
Okay.
I've read so many articles about soldiers having PTSD and coming back home. And it's like, I read an article where it was this guy and he was so ashamed to admit, you know, he had PTSD, that he was suffering from all the experiences that he, and it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And don't we have one of the highest suicidal for veterans?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's 20%. Crazy. And you can fix it.
But they don't
it.
Get any, yeah.
You just have to talk to them. And there's
And they may need medication, but they need intervention.
They need it.
And that's what they aren't getting.
And it's not happening, like, at all.
Exactly.
I know a few people that I know, like, if they've been previously in wars or in, mm-hmm. they fought, and so when I know some of them, when they have, like, there's loud noises, they'll, like, freak out a bit because they'll, like, think it'll be something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a trigger.
Like, it's just like reflex.
Yeah, it's a trigger. Triggers it. Well, even though now I know you've already told me, Harley, but would any of you consider joining the military? And I guess I'm talking to the two of you because I know where you sit and I know where Harley sits.
I mean, yeah, I've actually, like, thought about it before. Okay. So I think I would consider it, but I don't think, like, that's not my goal in life.
That's
like,
not your number
one. I'm not just ready to, like, sign up.
But what about you?
I don't want to join the military. I'm not, like, that's not for me. I've thought about, like, doing the whole, you know, working with them, but I would never, like, physically fight in the Army or the Navy with,
but
like,
see, that's the misconception that we have. Everything in the military is not fighting.
There's a lot. There's like so
many.
There's
different branches and there's different parts within branches. Like, you can just be like a technician.
Like,
or like, you can be an engineer. Some people want to be an engineer.
Like,
some people
I could, like, it's not that part. It's just the whole, like, actual
guns a-blazing.
Yeah, guns a-blazing part.
I agree. I would be a nurse or a medic.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, we have that misconception that, oh, join the military, and that means I'm going to be fighting out on the front. And everybody that joins the military, that does not happen. Okay, they have different responsibilities, different jobs, different units. You know, some units, for example, even way back during World War One. I mean, they had blacks in the military. They were on different units, but they had blacks in the military, and everybody was not fighting. Which leads to my next question: if we have a draft or a conscription, and we have individuals who are forced to participate in the war, how do you think they would be defending the country? I mean, if you're forced to do something that you don't want to do,
you're not, like,
enthusiastic.
Yeah, you're not motivated to do your best, I guess, if you're forced to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm forced to do a project or if I'm forced to read a book, I don't want to do it.
Right.
And you don't
if I voluntarily do it, I'll be like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, because in the past they've had problems where, you know, they didn't want to dress. They didn't want to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really care about the ramifications. So you're going to throw me in the brink.
And then there's the point of, hey, if you don't want to do it, hey, I'm going to hand you a gun.
Right.
What's next?
Mm-hmm.
Like, not saying it. I mean, there's a possibility of it happening, but there is also the possibility of someone turning on their... If you draft the wrong person, there's all this talks about, like, all these, like, large shootings and everything. If you what happens if you draft one of those people? They'd never say anything until they're out in the front, and then say they're in, like, a helicopter with, like, 30 other men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
Or if you get to the right job,
would you want to be? Would you want people defending you who really don't want to be there? Think about it.
Not really.
It doesn't sound too promising, to say the least.
Yeah.
So, in turn then, how do we address those who object? What do we do? You know, now in the past, they have had various exemptions.
Mm-hmm.
Way back when, if you were in school, okay, then that was enough for you not to have
everybody
to
serve. Everybody was trying to go to everybody college
was
back the, then.
Yeah, everybody was trying to go to college back then. So that was an excuse. If you were in the ministry, I think, that was another exception. So how do you suggest that we evaluate and assess those who do object? At this point, are there acceptable objections?
Yes, but I wouldn't want to be the one deciding that.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Like, if there was like scenario of like 30-year-old male that feeds his two younger siblings because his parents died.
Mm-hmm.
And the male is sent off to war, and the two siblings are minors. What would happen to the siblings? Mm-hmm. Would they go into foster care? Would they go with grandparents? Or what would happen?
That's a good point. And they did have those. And that was sort of one of the exceptions, mm-hmm. in that if you were married and...
Like a widow, or whatever.
Something like that, then those were exceptions. Okay.
I mean, if you have a super physically capable guy looking like Rambo, can go up and, you know, he's just...
But then think about it. We had, and I've mentioned this before in another program, we had Muhammad Ali,
mm-hmm.
who when he died, I mean, he was celebrated to the highest.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a time in his career that he was, you know, he was awful,
mm-hmm.
okay? Or at least that's how the public viewed him, because he was a conscientious object, and he did not. He was not going to go.
There were lots of... I remember I watched a documentary about that, and there were so many athletes who were like, I'm not going. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And lots of athletes
lot of people
were
left.
Shamed for that.
Right. They were shamed, or they left the country.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people evaded and left and went to Canada. So those are other, you know, variables that we have to consider. So... I mean, and I'm just asking you, I mean, what do you think is acceptable? Are there acceptable, you know?
I mean, there's a lot of scenarios that, like, in which someone couldn't go to war. Like, definitely family issues. A lot of people have mental health problems that, mm-hmm. like, would definitely, and if going to war would just make that worse. And
I started to say, and they may not have any mental health problems, but when they get there.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have them afterwards.
They may develop them, really. I mean, I think you mentioned, Kalisha, hey, people get in it, and then they're like, oh, my God, what are we doing here? The kinds of things that we have to do.
In my English class today, we just wrote one of our, like, bell ringer things was we wrote about the man in American Sniper who's, like, it was, like, two-year
mm-hmm.
thing, and it was, like, his two-year anniversary of his death. And we were talking about how would you be, he was, like, the most deadliest sniper in, like, American history.
Right.
Would you have a conscience, like, a clear enough conscience to kill all those people and be, like, okay after? Like, what physical or, like, emotional stuff would you go through?
Right.
That's crazy.
That was just a question.
That's a good question, though. That's a good point, and that's essentially exactly what we're mm-hmm. talking about. You know, how do you handle that? How do you separate that? And if you do go in and provide, give all the service that you possibly can,
mm-hmm.
then you come back, and what happens?
They send you right back.
Nobody
else.
Because there's nobody else.
Yeah, and a lot of people who, like, I feel this is based on, like, articles I read and just mm-hmm. random information, but when they come back, they feel like that's all they have. Like, the military is all they have because that's what they're used to, and, like, normal life is so much different. Like,
yes,
I heard from somebody, like, the military breaks you down and builds you back mm-hmm. up to mm-hmm. be a soldier, and mm-hmm. it's like...
You come back home,
yeah,
and you
all
have
you
to
think
be
is
so
soldier.
Different. A father,
yeah.
A citizen,
a husband,
participator, and you don't know that. So, I mean, you're more likely to just go back. Because all of this is
that's
so
what you
brand
know,
new.
And you have a camaraderie with, you know, your fellow soldiers or whatever, because they're the ones that you are close with.
Those are the guys that you fight for.
That's right.
And it's like, if you have a draft, it's so many people that would come back with these effects, and it's like, we're not ready for that. We're not prepared for the people we have in there now.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to treat people we just draft in?
Mm-hmm. I mean, those are all good points. I don't know how we answer them. I don't know how we address them. You know, how do we make deferments equitable? That's essentially what we're saying. Mm-hmm. How do we make it so it's fair? If we're going to have deferments, we're going to have exemptions. How do we make them so they're fair for everyone? Okay. Because what about, like you said, what about that whole underprivileged society who may not have the benefits mm-hmm. of being able... What do you say to them when they really are needed at home?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe the wife is home and the husband is leaving and the wife is working, but they both need to be there.
Because like the mom's working more mm-hmm. Days and nights or something, or mm-hmm. or vice versa or something.
I don't think there is a way. To completely apply every exception to every situation.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go back to when we were drafting for Vietnam, and we took all those young men and everybody. I mean, women were in the factory making supplies for us to go to war, and they just dealt with it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and you have the hippies, everybody was burning their cards, people were trying to go to college, people were leaving.
Indeed.
But people who were drafted, they just dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
They had to go.
Right. And usually at that time, those who were on the front line were the ones who were the lower socioeconomic mm-hmm. group.
Okay? Yeah.
They were the expendable ones.
That's right. They were deemed
because
as expendable.
Can you afford to go to college? Can you afford to
that's
leave?
Right.
Can you do this?
Yeah, and you have to be able to afford to do it.
And some of the things is when you're talking about the military would break you down, break you back up, you could just use that as a positive influence, as someone who didn't have a positive path that they were taking with their
mm-hmm.
life, or
mm-hmm.
they just didn't care about some things. You could break that person back down and build them back up as a better person or as a soldier.
And it has served that benefit. Mm-hmm. Harley, I'm glad you brought that up, because some people who may be lost or just uncertain about where they're going to go, they go into the military and it gives them a clear path,
mm-hmm.
you know, the structure, the routine. All of that is beneficial in helping them to grow and mature. And lots of times they may stay and make a career out of it.
A lot of people need routines to,
mm-hmm.
Be successful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they need someone to put that structure
mm-hmm.
In their lives. And once they have that structure, they're able to make it.
It's like doggy say, doggy do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, the draft proved so controversial, as I mentioned before, that in 1973, Congress switched to an all-volunteer force. But young men, even today, as I mentioned earlier, still have to register or face a felony charge that carries up to $250,000 worth of fines. And you can go, even today, and up to 5 years in prison. You may be denied driver's license, you may be denied student loans, you may be denied government jobs. If the government does get involved in a war and doesn't have enough volunteers, the draft can be reinstated. The Gate Commission is the one that determined that the nation's interests are best served by all volunteer forces. And that the combination of even volunteer and conscripts just don't work well at all. Do any of you have family members who have been in the military?
I do, My older brother is in the military, and he just, yesterday got back from a one-year deployment
mm-hmm.
in Africa, so.
And what has he said? I mean,
I haven't talked to him yet.
Yeah.
He got back really late in Texas last night.
Yeah,
so.
But doesn't mm-hmm. he have to go to a camp?
Yeah,
or something?
We won't see him for 2 weeks because he has to go through a transition phase to get
so.
Back into normal.
Okay, so when you say he got back, does that mean he's out of the military now?
No, he's
just visiting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. essentially. He has, in 2020, he has to go on another deployment, so.
Oh, so he'll be home.
He'll be home for 3 years, and then.
Oh, okay, and then he goes back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so what will he do while he's home?
I don't know. I think
live life.
Yeah, just he's gonna live with his girlfriend and get a job. I don't really know. So.
But he knows he has to go back in 2020.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Do you feel like the government can mandate patriotism?
No.
Mm-hmm. Patriotism is a weird thing. We were reading this, I think it was a George Orwell short story, but it was about the language of English and how patriotism and some words are just so overused. They've just become, like, when you hear the word, you think, oh, good. Like, when you hear patriotism, there's not a clear definition of it. You just kind of hear, oh, that's a good thing. So if somebody's described as a patriot, you're always like, oh, they're good. They did a good thing. But, like, what they did may not have been great. So, like, if you went somewhere and you had, what's that technical term they use when they, like, kill families? But it was, like, accidental.
Civilian casualties.
Yeah, something civilian casualties, something like that. But, like, they did that, but, like, they're a patriot. And so whenever you hear that, you're like, oh, good, even though they may have done something that doesn't follow your morals exactly. Mm-hmm. It's just that the word's been overused. It's just a good thing in everybody's head.
It's like, does the good outweigh the evil?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I think that patriotism varies during certain points, like, in our history of what's going on in society. I think it just depends on the events and how people are being treated and what we're doing with war and how people feel about the economy. Like, that's when the economy is great and everything's fine and the presidency is going fine. We're all patriotism. Everything's awesome. Mm-hmm. When something bad happens, everybody's like, this sucks. That's basically it.
Like, right after 9/11, like, the whole country was just... We were all,
in shock.
But, like, everybody banded together and, like, it's very U.S.
Everybody, patriotism. Yeah.
But, like, times like now, with, like, Trump being president and everything, everyone's kind of not feeling it.
Okay. Well, I asked you to hold your thoughts for a minute. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return momentarily. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this hour we are looking at conscription versus the all-volunteer force. Would you all die for your country? Would you lay down your life for in defense of your country?
I'm a Canadian citizen, so, you know, I'm not, like, I don't even think I have to sign up for the draft, be in the military. I'm
no.
Right here. Would I die for Canada? Maybe.
Okay, so you would die for your country, though. Yeah. That answers it. Yeah. Doesn't matter what your country is, okay? Yeah. Let's say, would you die for your country?
Yeah. In all honesty, no.
Okay. All right. Well, I just want to hear from everybody. I'm going to go right around the table.
Well, for me, it's like, I mean, this is my country, but, like, I didn't really have a choice. Like, I didn't just, like, it wasn't like I was born and I was like, well, let me go to America because that's... Mm-hmm. Where I feel like I belong.
Yeah, maybe, you know? Maybe it's like beliefs, though. You know, like, if my beliefs align with what I'm fighting for, and if my country's fighting for that, I would die for my country.
That.
Yes,
that's
all the way.
But okay.
If it's like a draft, since we're talking about this, and I'm just drafted into my country, and I don't really know what's going on, I don't really know what I'm fighting for, I don't think I'd be prepared to die for my country.
But just speaking in general, if what I was fighting for, and if I was fighting for the protection of the ones that I loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, if I was, like, passionate.
Okay, and Harlow.
That's what I was going to touch down on. Yeah. If I was fighting to protect the ones I cared for, I'd do it. I mean, it's not my first choice, but I'd do
it. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like America protects and cares for all?
It's a controversial topic.
We try overall. In a general sense, that's what we all want.
Okay.
I would say no.
I hope.
I'm just going to come out and flat out say it, no. Mm-hmm. Because of 10 million different things and race and
gender
and everything that is far and wide. I don't think so. I think as a general, as Americans, as America... When people go out and fight, they're fighting for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No.
Other comments? When we look at draft or conscription, could we call it involuntary servitude? Because you're draft.
Can you elaborate
on that? That's scary. That's,
yeah. I mean, but you're being, wait a minute now, think about it. You're being drafted.
Yeah.
This is not on your own accord, mm-hmm. okay? The government is saying, you are going to come serve in this army, or whether you want to or not. Mm-hmm. So it's not voluntary.
Mm-hmm. No.
So, and while you're there, you're going to be providing services.
It's involuntary.
Is it involuntary? I'm just...
I think that what scared all of us is that involuntary servitude is associated with other things. So, like, I thought involuntary servitude, and I kind of just, like, freaked out. But if you think about it...
That's what it is.
It's just draft is a very pretty word for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because if you said involuntary servitude... I mean, I think you'd be a little bit scared and mm-hmm. angry.
Because it sounds like slavery.
It yeah. does.
Right. But.
Sounds like a fancy term for slavery.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just trying to see where you all sit. What do you think about that? I mean, that's been one of the complaints about draft. Okay. So I didn't just come up with that, but that's been one of the complaints. But what do you, you know, where do you sit? What's your perspective on that?
Like you said, everybody in the military doesn't fight. So maybe if you found a way to use everybody's talents in a way to help the country, that would be great.
But
it's
still,
like an ideal situation, but that's
still involuntary.
Yeah.
That's, see, my point is not so much what you do, okay? It's how you got
right,
there.
The purpose.
Okay.
And
then see, it's not about what you're doing,
yeah.
okay? Whether you're on the front line or whether you're a cook. If you don't want to do it, if it's involuntary,
yeah,
well, you can.
That's a whole different
you
thing.
You can also debate that because of the fact that you are in America and there are people who mm-hmm. are dying for you and keeping you safe and you have all these freedoms that so many mm-hmm. people do mm-hmm. not have, that it is something you're just going to give up because so many other people before you have done it for you.
Right.
I mean, you could totally argue that too, that your servitude is like a how would you say that like a giving back for mm-hmm. everyone else who has done it for mm-hmm. you.
Some families, it's like tradition, I guess, to go into the military, like the males to go into the military.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, it is tradition.
It, like,
it's honorable. It
yeah.
runs in the family.
Well, I think it's like it's complicated because. Involuntary servitude is like calling the whole draft involuntary servitude is kind of like an umbrella term, I guess, because it's like person by person, really. Like,
well, if you're drafted, it's not person by person. If you're drafted, we're talking right now. We're just talking about conscription. We're not talking about voluntary. If you're drafted, you don't have any choice. That's the whole point.
Yeah,
you know that it's nothing voluntary about it if you're drafted. Because by definition, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's
true.
Yeah.
That's just it.
Ingrid's
thought about it. She's like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What I want to do in this, because Kalisha raised some other issues, and I thought it would be good to talk about them, and. Just talking about being 18 and how this magic number of 18, what it does, what it says about you. Trial by jury is fundamental in the United States democracy. It says that, you know, you are entitled to a trial and you're entitled to a jury. And once you're 18, either the state or a federal court can randomly select your name from records and then give you a summons and have you come to court, and you may become a juror. How do you feel about this? I mean, this is...
It's annoying, but it's probable.
You're, like, acting... You're being a part of the system that you like want to trust, that you want to believe in. My teacher just got called in for jury duty, mm-hmm. and she didn't get put on a case, but mm-hmm. it happens to, like, I think my stepdad had to do it too, mm-hmm. and he was out of work for like 4 days, but it's just something that you do.
Yeah. My dad, he went there for jury duty at like 9 a.m. one day and didn't leave until like 7 or 8 at night, but he didn't get selected for the case. He was just like one of the last groups that didn't get selected for the case. So he was there all day.
So he was there all day.
And then didn't get selected on like the last like cut.
Mm-hmm. And so he had to sit there through that all day long.
Sit there all day and then not get selected the last cut. Which, I mean, I think he was fine with not get selected. I think he was just annoyed that he had to sit there for 10 hours.
For nothing.
Yeah. And just like not.
Well, with jury duty, who should be exempt? Do you think we should have exemptions there?
I don't think so. I think you do.
I mean, I think some of the exemptions are your job, you know, if you're a health professional, okay? if you are responsible for the elderly or young kids and you're the sole provider. Right. So there are some exceptions, and I'm just asking, you know, do you think that those are appropriate? Is that okay?
I think that's
you agree?
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. If you work in a hospital and you're like on the emergency staff, you should definitely not be missing work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. The reason I ask these questions is all goes back to that magic number of turning 18. Now, turning 18, you have certain responsibilities that you have to adhere to. Jury duty is one of them. Military service is another one. Being able to vote is another one. Driver's license is another one. And all of these center around the age, okay? How ironic, okay? You can do all this stuff at 18. What is the magic number of 18? What difference, a day?
You're viewed as an adult, I guess.
Someone just decided that 18 was the magical
and number. Changes everybody's lives.
You know, but think about it now.
It's just a day.
We just talked about jury duty. All of a sudden you turn 18 and you have the ability to determine if someone spends the rest of their life in jail or if they die.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they're crazy.
Or whatever, you know? I mean, I'm just giving you extremes, mm-hmm. you know? But
I mean, like, and a lot of people who turn 18, like, are still in high school when they turn 18. Mm-hmm. Like, they still haven't even finished mm-hmm. school yet.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So what does that say?
I mean, I think, if I remember correctly, like, when do you fully mature? It's like 24
or something.
Like 25.
That's,
mm-hmm.
about, that's
like,
the whole
fully
point.
Mature. Like, mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think they just, it's like the drinking thing. If you give 18-year-olds the ability to drink at 18, that's, I mean, it's the maturity level thing.
Right.
You don't want to give them that at 18 because, believe me, it's
But they can put, see, the problem I have, they can put their life, they can lay down, they can go to, they can go to war, and they can kill people or be killed.
Then it's based on what is important to the government, what matters to the government, what they think. Because nobody, the alcohol thing, they don't really care about that. What they care is about, are you going to be an active participant in our society? And are you going to be there when we need you? That's why everything happens at 18.
Mm-hmm.
Where if not, it would happen at 21 or at 25 when you fully mature. They just don't care about full...
Well, don't misunderstand me. Now, I'm not advocating saying that, you know, you should be able to drink at 18. If it just seems like, if you can make decisions on someone else's life or even make decisions on your own life at 18, if you can put yourself out there during war, then not being able to buy alcohol, it just doesn't sit well. to say the least. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Doesn't correlate.
It definitely doesn't.
Wouldn't even know.
So how should it be addressed? Is it a problem?
Wasn't the age to join the military a higher, and they lowered it because they needed more people?
Yeah,
like you're totally right. It's because the government
probably used to be.
It's because of what the government needs.
Yeah, and we're like here for what they need. So
I mean, if it gets really bad, they'll probably lower it to like 16.
Yeah.
If it gets really bad.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, I just think.
I can't imagine going to the military. Like,
these are babies going out there.
That's our age.
Even at 18.
Crazy. I mean, I'm saying as the United States, we don't do it, but there's some other countries that use kids in war.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of, I mean, like, consciously, would you be able to kill a kid? I wouldn't.
Like, well, what if they were going to kill you? I mean, because that's what I've heard a lot of people talk about. I could never kill a kid. And I had someone who had been on the front line and talked about kids, you know, being really babies, yet they would be carrying a bomb.
Yeah.
So,
and dudes.
What do you do?
What do you do?
It's you or them.
And that's like,
I mean, they're
going to
die anyways if they had the bomb. If they're like a suicide bomber and they like plant a bomb on a kid, I mean, that kid's going to die anyway. So, I mean.
But that messes you up.
I mean, it's terrible to do, but like.
That messes you up psychologically.
So how do you handle that kind of thing?
I don't even think it's the. Like, maybe it's not even. Because at first, it wasn't it like, you know, kids aren't allowed to drink at 18 because it's not. Ready, like, you can't drink at 18, that'll mess up your body, and the military will mess up your body, yes, but like emotionally at 18, the military is gonna mess up your mind, you're like, you're gonna come back, like, I don't think kids are ready for that, but that's
right
personal.
Well, okay, so what do you think? I mean, because this is what we want to know. What do you think, you as young folks, what do you think about this? Because these are going to impact you, they're not going to impact me at all. You know what I mean? Been there, done that. Okay. So it's not going to impact me, but you all are going to be ones who reap the benefits.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't.
It's like if you turn 18 and you're drafted and you have to go over and you like get injured and then you have to like kill a kid or something, that's like that you're going to have that for the rest of your life. Like 18 is like really young. You're going to have that the rest of your life.
Yeah, like you might have had a plan. Like you could have been this greatest, like happiest 18-year-old ready to take on the world or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if they draft you and it's like
literally take on the world.
I think it should be the age should be moved up. And if they're going to leave the age at 18, then they need to do whatever possible to prepare 18-year-olds, to prepare everyone who joins in the Army, enlists, volunteers in the Army, for what they're going to see, for what it's going to be like, and afterward, like, how to get back into real life, or how to return.
Well, that's a big problem.
Tell you
assimilating.
The 2-week transition camp that her brother's going through.
Mm-hmm.
That's the program for it to do, but sometimes.
But 2 weeks?
It's not enough.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
2 weeks?
A year to 2 weeks.
It's not enough.
2 weeks. It can't
be. Really you're deployed
enough.
For a year.
How long had he been gone?
He's been gone for 10 months.
Okay. And where? He was in
Africa.
Where in Africa?
Djibouti.
Oh, okay. He was.
Mm-hmm.
So there's fighting going on there. But yes.
Yeah.
I know. That's when you said that.
And yeah, like I don't think it's enough for him. Like I'm not scared or anything, but I'm a little worried that like.
Yeah, I mean,
cause,
I know
like,
you
there's
said
some stuff going
he used
on
to
there.
Sub here, and he was like, I don't want to come back and sub because he like, what did he say? Like you can tell the story better than I can, but I think it was like
it's
the
like
kids
he's
he
seen
saw,
like starving kids before. He doesn't want to like just come back and like just like be around kids all the time. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and I don't think 2 weeks is enough for him to just, like, get over that and move on with his life.
And that's what I'm talking about, you know? Exactly that. How do you handle that? What do you do? Is there any preparation for that?
Better funding. Like, if we're going to send people to fight for us, then we should, I personally would invest a ton of money to help them when they come back, to help them transition, to help them
to help
deal
them
with
when
all
they
that.
Go.
Yeah.
I feel like
considering what they're going to see.
I feel like they should be like meeting with someone like all the time, like regularly to help them
on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
There's some programs that probably do that.
They do, but
there may be, but
not
obviously
enough.
Not enough.
Yeah. It's not.
Well, we are out of time, okay? Again, I want to extend my sincere appreciation for you coming and sharing your thoughts to my listening audience. Thank you for the privilege of your time and your ear. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.